Well, hey, we are in the middle of a series, this is week two now, of a series that we are calling Communication Breakdown. Communication Breakdown. Last week, as we began this series, if you were here, you know that I talked about this statistic that I found as I was doing my research, getting prepped for this series. And you can actually go on the internet, you can go and you can search different keywords and search terms that are being put into Google and YouTube. And one of the statistics that I came across just kind of blew my mind. And that was that every single month, the keyword phrase, how to pray, is searched over 137,000 times. And what that caused me to immediately begin to think about is the fact that there is so much confusion when it comes to prayer. I think for a lot of people, prayer is this great mystery. How do I do it? How do I approach God? How do I communicate with this God that, honestly, sometimes I'm not sure is even there? It doesn't feel like he's there. I can't see him. I can't touch him. So how do I communicate with this God? And so we began to unpack that a little bit last week. And really, that's what this series is about. We're just trying to unpack the mystery of this whole thing of talking to God, conversing with God, having communication with him. And this week, the thing that I just kept coming back to over and over again as I was thinking about this second part, because really, week one was part 1A, and this is honestly part 1B. These two parts are going to go intimately together. As I thought about prayer, the thing that kept coming back to me is that it is such a gift. Prayer is this incredible, amazing gift that God has given to us. When we really understand what it is, when we begin to fully embrace it, it's healing from brokenness. It's power in the midst of circumstances that we don't think we have the strength to overcome on our own. There is tremendous, tremendous power in prayer that we will never access if we don't understand what it is or how to do it. And so as I was thinking about that this week, the thing that it led me to is this. Oftentimes in my own life, and I don't think I'm the only one, we waste that gift. We waste it, and as we waste it, we miss out on that incredible power that he wants to give us. And so we began last week with this definition of what prayer is, because we talked about some sort of preconceptions we have about prayer, right? A lot of us have come from church backgrounds, and we've been taught this is how you pray. Maybe some of us, it's the lack of church background and the lack of what it looks like to pray that we come into the room with. You know, is it closing my eyes, bowing my head? Is it a certain way that I put my hands? Is it a certain way that I have to talk to God? And the definition I think a lot of us have heard over time is prayer is just talking to God. But last week we defined it this way. Prayer is simply intimacy with God. And this is a huge difference from just simply talking to God. What we began to understand last week is that prayer is so much more than just talking to God. It's this dynamic dialogue. There's movement to it. It's us talking, but it's also us listening. Sometimes it's us listening a lot more than it's us talking. And we began to unpack that idea. And what we discovered in week one, and this is so vitally important, this is the foundation for everything that we're going to talk about in the coming weeks. That God went to incredible lengths so that we could have intimacy with him. He did something incredible for us, right? He tore the veil. We talked about the veil in the temple. Jesus came into this world to tear the veil, to make a way so that we could have total access to God the Father and to Jesus the Son and the Holy Spirit. And until we understand that, until we recognize that we have total access, that God is actually near, that he's not this distant God who's far off somewhere in space and time that we don't have access to, until we recognize that, we'll never have a healthy prayer life. That is the foundation. That is the beginning, knowing. And for some of us in the room, just knowing maybe for the first time that I can go to God anytime I want and that he's right there, he's with me, and he desires a relationship with me. That's a game changer. And so this week, I want to encourage you, if you did not get a chance to listen to week one of Communication Breakdown, to go to our podcast, grab that message, listen to it in the car on the way to work sometime this week or whatever, you know, cleaning the house. Listen to that message because I believe it's foundational. Because what we're going to talk about today is so intimately hitched to that and tied to that. Without that, I think we miss out a little bit on what we're going to talk about today. And so as we begin part two here, or really part 1B, here's the question I have for us. What is it about your closest relationships that makes them close? Have you ever thought about this? What is it about your most intimate relationships that makes them intimate? And I think the first thing that pops into our mind is, well, it's time spent. It's the amount of time that I'm around this person. That's what makes for intimacy. But the reality is, that's not true at all. Because if you think about your life and you think about time and the time you spend around certain people, you can be married to someone and live in the same house as someone and spend lots and lots of time around them, and there can be zero intimacy. You can be ships passing in the night. You can be sitting in a room and both be on your phones and not having any kind of communication or conversation whatsoever. You're still spending time together, but there's no intimacy there. And so time does not equal intimacy. Well, maybe it's talking then. The more I talk with someone, the more intimate I will become with them. That's not necessarily true either. I mean, how many of us go to work or go to school every day, have classmates or coworkers that we are doing business with, having transactional type conversation with on a daily basis? That does not necessarily mean that there's intimacy happening there. You're talking business. That conversation can be very, very shallow. No, what makes intimacy happen between two people in any relationship is this willingness to be vulnerable, to admit to someone, I don't have it all together. I'm struggling with something here. Let me share with you the deepest parts of myself. That is what creates intimacy in our lives. The problem for me, and again, I don't think I'm the only one, is that oftentimes I'm not good at being vulnerable. I'm not good at admitting when I'm helpless, when I don't have it all together. I don't want to admit that. I struggle with that. And because I struggle with that in my relationships with people, I'll be honest with you, sometimes I struggle in that with my relationship with God. And here's what I want you to hear this morning. Until we can admit that we are helpless before God, until we can open up to him, be vulnerable in front of him, share with him the deepest parts of our life, the stuff that we struggle with the most, we will never have a healthy prayer life. This is the beginning of intimacy. It's how we create intimacy with God. If the first step, the first piece is recognizing he's there and he wants a relationship and he wants to be intimate with us, the second step is we have to take a step to be intimate with him. We've got to open ourselves up to him. And we aren't, let's just be honest, let's just be transparent this morning. We're not very good at that. And so maybe you're sitting here this morning, maybe you're listening this morning, and you've thought about this question before. I want to pray. I want to know how to pray, but I don't know where to start. How do I begin having this conversation with God? How do I begin communicating with him? Maybe you're sitting here and you've been praying to God, but you just feel like there's a disconnect, like there's no intimacy. This morning, I want to unpack this idea of going before God and admitting our helplessness and just how powerful that can be in our lives. And so if you brought a Bible this morning, we're going to be in Luke. We're going to be in chapter 8. I encourage you, you can turn there. As always, we will have the words up on the screen. But I encourage you to be in the Word. Start using your Bibles. Look at them. It is powerful. His Word is powerful. It will change our lives. That's why we look at it every single week. But we're going to look at an account in the book of Luke. Luke was one of the gospel writers, right? Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, he wrote the third gospel. He was a physician. He was a doctor. He was highly educated. And Luke, unlike the other gospel writers, was not a disciple. He did not spend intimate time with Jesus, but what he did was he spent time with the disciples and all of the other people who spent time with Jesus, and he did this incredibly thorough research into the life of Jesus. I love the book of Luke. It's got a very different feel to it than the other gospels. And yet all four of those gospels have so much of the same material. Four different guys written at different times, in different locations, and yet all corroborating the same story. And so this particular account that we're going to read, we find Jesus doing what Jesus seems like he's always doing in his life. He's traveling around, he's teaching, he's healing people, he's doing all these amazing miracles, and he has drawn a crowd, as always. And the crowd is pressing in on him. There's so many of them. Imagine the most famous person you can think of, the most famous celebrity you can think of right now. And there's no security, there's no bouncers, there's no one to keep the crowds away, and they are just pressing in on Jesus. Let's read this together. It says, as Jesus went, the people pressed around him. There was a woman who'd had a discharge of blood for 12 years. And though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. She came up behind him and she touched the fringe of his garment. And immediately her discharge of blood ceased. Jesus said, who is it that touched me? When all denied it, Peter said, Master, the crowds surround you and are pressing in on you. But Jesus said, someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me. And when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him, and how she had been immediately healed. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. And so I want to unpack this piece by piece here, little section by little section. So we're going to go back to that very first section. This is what it says. As Jesus went, the people pressed around him. So we've got this image, right? Visualize this with me. Make a mental picture. Jesus is trying to work through this crowd. They're all around him. There's barely any room to move. Imagine a concert where everybody's just pressing in, trying to get as close to the front of that stage as they can possibly get. That's what they're trying to do to Jesus. And it says there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years. Now let's stop there for a second. She's got this infirmity. She's got this thing that's just this health crisis that she cannot kick. And no matter how hard she tries, it says she spent all her living on physicians. She could not be healed by anyone. No one could help her with this problem. And what we need to understand about this issue that she's facing is it went beyond the physical. So yes, there's this physical issue. Probably a lot of weakness came along with this. You're constantly bleeding out, right? There's the issue of just not being able to go anywhere in public and being embarrassed. But most of all, if you had an affliction like this in those days, based on Jewish culture, it made you unclean. Based on the old covenant law, it made you what's called unclean. You were not able to be right before God. And what that meant was nobody was allowed to have any physical contact with this woman. And so can you imagine 12 years basically being shunned by your own family and your friends, not being touched by a single person for all of that time? I think that would be so much worse than the physical pain that she was going through. And so she's desperate. She's tried everything humanly possible, and she's heard the stories of Jesus. She's heard the miracles that he has done. She's heard the rumors that he may be the Messiah, the chosen one, the Savior of the world, finally come to save her and her people. And she has to get close to Jesus. This is what happened next. It says she came up behind him, and she touched the fringe of his garment, and immediately her discharge of blood ceased. And so, again, mental picture. Imagine this. She's fighting her way through this crowd. I envision her maybe like almost having to drop to a crawl to weave her way in between the legs of people, because that's the only way she's going to get close to Jesus. And she finally gets as close as she can get. And what does she do? She just reaches out and touches the very fringe of his robe, the fringe of his garment. That's all the closer she can get. But she knows if she can just get close, something miraculous might happen. And that's what happens. She touches the fringe of that garment, and it says immediately her discharge of blood ceased. Next, Jesus recognizes something's happened. He's God. He's Jesus. This doesn't take him by surprise, right? It says that Jesus said, "Who was it that touched me?" There's this huge crowd, right? And when all denied it, Peter said, "Master, the crowds surround you and are pressing in on you." In other words, Peter's saying, it could have been anybody who touched you. Like, there's a gazillion people here. Anyone could have touched you. Maybe it was just somebody that brushed up against you. But Jesus knows better. He says, "Someone touched me, for I perceive that power has gone out from me." See, the most amazing thing to me about this situation is that all she had to do was get close. She just had to touch the garment of Jesus, the robe, the fringe of his robe. And the power automatically came out of Jesus into her life and healed her of something that no one could heal. She just needed to get close. We're going to come back to that. It's so powerful. After that, though, it says, when the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him, and how she had been immediately healed. And so she's scared. She's scared because she knows she's unclean, and she's just touched the supposed Messiah. And again, what we need to understand about Jewish culture is that if you touched something that was unclean, you became unclean. And so when she touched Jesus, what should have happened is that Jesus should have been made unclean, and the exact opposite happened. She was made clean. She was made clean. And so she's scared. She's looking around at all these people. They're staring at her. I imagine they're looking at her with resentment in their eyes. "Who are you? Get out of here. You're unclean. You're not supposed to be here. You're not supposed to be around this guy." It says she fell trembling. She declared in the presence of all the people why she had touched him and how she had been immediately healed. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace." She was immediately healed. Why? Humility. Helplessness. In that moment, she got to a place where she was so low and she was so desperate that she was willing to be humiliated in front of this entire crowd of her own people just so she could have a chance to be close to Jesus. And this is the message this morning. See, we can learn an incredible amount about how to have intimacy and closeness with our God, and about prayer from what this woman went through. I want you to mark this down. If you have something to write with, whether it's your phone, you got a tablet, something. When we admit we are powerless, that is when his power becomes limitless. When we are able to admit that we are helpless, that we are powerless, it opens up the opportunity for his power to work in our life in a limitless way. This woman, she came to Jesus in her complete and total helplessness, in complete humility. She laid down her pride. And for 12 years, nothing worked. Nothing could fix her. Nothing could save her. And in one moment, all she had to do was get close to Jesus, close to God. And it was as if his power just automatically came out. She didn't have to ask. She didn't have to say a word. She got in his presence and his power came to her. And this is what I don't want us to miss this morning. The key to her being able to get close to Jesus was her willingness to admit that she was powerless. And the second she did that, it changed everything. Everything. The problem for me, I think the problem for many of us, is that we don't have intimacy with God because we have a pride issue. Let's just be real and honest this morning. I have a pride issue. I'll start with myself. I don't like to admit when I'm weak. I don't like to admit that I'm helpless or I'm powerless. Yeah, sometimes I need help, but I'm not helpless. That's a whole new level of need. I'm not powerless. Sometimes I need a little power, I need a little boost, I need a little help, but in general, I got this. I can do this on my own. And what I am realizing more and more and more is just how weak I really am. How helpless and powerless I really am. And what I'm realizing is that the more I refuse to admit that, the worse off my prayer life is. The worse off my intimacy is with my Heavenly Father. Because it is in my powerlessness and my helplessness that it drives me to Him. When I don't think I need God, I'm not going to go to God. When I'm desperate for Him and I know that I need Him, that's when I go to Him. And what I'm trying to do in my life and what I want to encourage you to do is recognize this. In everything, in all situations in your life, no matter what it is, you need His help. We need His help. We need His power. All we have to do is lay down our pride and say, I need it. I need your help. We will never be able to pray, truly pray, until we get to that point. I love this quote from a guy named Ole Hallisby. Good Ole Hallisby. He wrote a book on prayer back in the 1800s. Sometimes the old stuff is the best stuff, I'm telling you. This is what he says about prayer. Prayer and helplessness are inseparable. Only he who is helpless can truly pray. Your helplessness is your best prayer. Sometimes that's all prayer is. It's just coming to God and confessing to Him, I'm powerless and I'm helpless and I need you. Will you intervene on my behalf? Will you help me with this situation? I don't know what things in your life you have ever felt powerless to or helpless to. Let me give you just a few of mine. Maybe these will resonate with you. Anger. I've been struggling with this one this week. Two different times in my life this week. First on Tuesday and one yesterday. After the first one, I thought, oh, okay, I'm gonna make some changes. I gotta do some things differently. Guess what? It happened again. You wanna know why? Because I tried to do it on my own strength and my own power. And it doesn't work. Maybe for you, it's something to do with your marriage. Maybe for you, it's something to do with parenting. Maybe for you, it's something to do with gossip or laziness or gluttony, or the list could go on and on and on. I don't know what your weakness is. I don't know where you're totally helpless. But I know where I am. And I know that I'm tired of trying to do things on my own. I'm tired of believing this lie that somehow, some way, I have the power to overcome something that for years I have not been able to overcome. That's just insanity. That's craziness. And what's amazing to me about our God is this, is that he wants to help. He wants to change us. He wants to do something in our life. But there's a block. For me, there's a block. When I allow myself and my own, yeah, I can do this, to fill me up, and for me to believe that, it blocks the power of God coming into my life. And so I want to give you a little illustration here this morning. That's why I've got the whiteboard. This is a really high-tech, fancy whiteboard that came from Logan's room. This right here is you. This cylinder. And I want you to imagine that inside this little cylinder is all of the stuff that you struggle with every single day. All of the things that you know you need help with, but you're maybe not quite ready to admit it. And some of us, I think, you know, maybe it fills up to here. Maybe it's here. And there might be a little space in here where you've admitted some things. Okay, God, I give it to you. You can have it. And over here, there's another cylinder. And this one is God. And inside of this cylinder, it's full. It's full of power, man. All the way to the top. And I got to tell you, it never runs out. Ever. It's always full. No matter how much power comes out of this, it's always full. It gets replenished every single time. But you and I, over here, we don't have that ability. And every time I think, oh, right here, this is my marriage. I got this. I can do this. This is my parenting. I got this. I think I can do this. This is my job. This is my finances. No, I got this, God. I can handle this. Here's what we do. See, we only have enough room for so much power in here. And if I'm filled up with my own power, which is very limited and very weak, there's only so much room for this to come in. And here's what we do. We give up a little bit of ourselves. We admit a little bit of helplessness. We admit a little bit of powerlessness, but we won't give him the whole thing. And as long as we won't give him the whole thing, guess what's going to happen? There's going to continue to be a block. And we'll never be fully filled up. And so here's what I want to challenge you to do. I want to challenge you to begin to look at every single aspect of your life and admit that you're helpless. That's a really, really difficult challenge. To admit that you are powerless in every single area of your life. Because here's what I'm coming to understand about myself. Just about the time I think I've got it down, just about the time I think that I'm in control, that I can do this on my own, something comes along and shows me that I can't. And I don't know what that is for you. Maybe it's been this week, this month. Maybe you've been battling something this entire year. But I want to encourage you to just get rid of all of this and allow this right here, this limitless power to fill you up over and over and over again. And as you do that, here's what's going to happen in your life. Those areas where you've been weak, where you've been struggling, where you've been helpless, he's going to begin to work on those things, and he's going to be able to give you the power and the strength to overcome those things. And oh, by the way, the areas where you thought you were really good, where you didn't think you needed his help, he's going to make them better too. He's going to give you power in ways that you can't even imagine. But we have to get rid of the block. It's like he wants to give us grass-fed chicken, lean protein, spinach. Like, that's the kind of power he wants to give us. And we're over here the whole time eating Twinkies, thinking that Twinkies is going to do the job, is going to sustain us, is going to give us the power that we need and the strength that we need for things in our life. It doesn't work that way. There's not enough nutrients in a Twinkie. We need his power in our lives. This is the essence of prayer. God, I am helpless. I confess to you that I can't do this on my own. Help me, please. God, I'm begging you. Intercede on my behalf. And so today, I don't know. I don't know where you're at. I don't know what your struggles are, where you feel totally weak, where maybe you're weak and you still need help. But I know this. I know that our God is close. He is near. He desires intimacy with us. And if we will just open ourselves up to him, he will pour out his power into our life. And you will see situations and circumstances in your life changing like that. Just like that woman, 12 long years. Like, instantly, Jesus' power came out to her. What an incredible thing. Now, I know what you might be thinking, because this is where I've been a couple times, and I want to kind of close with this. Justin, sometimes I'm so helpless and I'm so powerless, I don't even know the right words to say. I'm in such a situation, in such a position right now that I don't even have the words. And here's what I need you to know today. You may not have the words, but you don't need them. God hears you. He knows your thoughts. He knows your struggles. He knows everything that you deal with. He created you. And sometimes all we have to do is just go, ah, ah, and he will hear us. He can interpret that. He's God. He knows exactly what that means. I love how Paul puts this in Romans. He says, in the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself, God himself, intercedes for us. Through what? Through wordless groans. Ah! And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. He hears our groans. He hears our cries. And even if we don't know what to say, here's my encouragement to you today. Just groan out to him. Cry out to him. You don't have to say a word. He knows. He knows the posture of your heart, the helplessness of your heart, the powerlessness of your heart and your spirits. Would you give it to him today? That's prayer, guys. That's all it is. Standing before God who created you and admitting that you're helpless. And as we admit that we are helpless, as we admit that we are powerless, his power will become limitless in our lives. That is my prayer for you. If you are a Jesus follower, you have access to that power. Let's begin living in it today. Every day, let's get up, let's go to our knees, and let's say, okay, God, I can't do this on my own. I need you in every aspect of my life. And if you don't know Christ, if you've never had a relationship with him, maybe today's the day you admit for the first time, I'm helpless in this life. I want your power. I want you to fill me up. Jesus, would you come into my life? I submit to you. I give you my life. I know that you can change it, and I'm giving it to you. I surrender. I lay down my pride. He will begin to work in and through you. Because as you admit you are powerless, his power will become limitless. That's my hope and my prayer for us. Know that God is near and admit that we are helpless. Begin to build that intimacy with him. And in the coming weeks, here's what we'll talk about. We'll start to talk about how to actually pray, what to pray for. But until we get these two things right, I don't believe that it will matter. And so this morning, I'm gonna ask you to stand. And we're gonna worship together. And in this moment, I want you to think about that one thing. And I'm sure there's lots of things. I mean, I could go down a litany of things in my life right now where I just feel so powerless. But what is it right now? What's that one big thing that you just know? You've been trying to do it on your own strength. And you can't do it, no matter how many times you tried. In this moment, would you just do some work with God? Would you do some business with God? Would you lay it down at his feet? Would you admit your powerlessness to him? And would you allow him to fill you up? That is my prayer for you and for this community as we go into this next week. That we would recognize that. That we would allow him to change us. Let's do some business with God.